dreaming about a room full of men. Well, it's not even a dream. I'm in a room full of men. So, got one of them right there, Eric, and I got
Aloha.
Aloha. This is Felicia and Marshall with KKCR, Kauai Soapbox, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea. And we are so happy to be here. We got a world of things to talk about today. Eric Hansen is in the studio. Mason Chalk's going to be on the phone around 5 o'clock. And we're going to be talking about a whole lot of things, from the Global Women's March, first few days of the presidential administration, to the important role of the indigenous connection of people to the land. We're going to look at how do we shift from reckless exploitation to learning deeper, more sacred connections to the land and building solutions. And Kauai Soapbox is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with The Kauai Store, Betty Jean Nativio, and Howley Girl.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, staff, board, members, volunteers, or underwriters.
The Kauai Store is located in Kapa'a on the highway in front of Kostilas. The store has authentic Kauai products, including clothing, snacks, art, coffee, crafts, and more. We even have local food samples. The Kauai Store products are also available online at thekauaistore.com.
Betty Jean Nativio, artist for hire, teaching both art and cooking, including the School of Chocolate Art for all ages and abilities. Multi-art mediums, including reverse glass painting, available for events, signage, custom gifts, and more. More information at BettyJeanNativio.com or 808-652-3781.
Howley Girl Island Suites presents The Tea Room in the gallery located in Kinipopo Shopping Center in Kapa'a, offering full-service high tea and desserts. More information at 808-822-2253.
KKCR listens to you. If you'd like to make comments or provide feedback regarding our programming, or to suggest programming you'd like to hear, go to kkcr.org, click on the contact link, and take our listener survey. Or send us a letter at KKCR, P.O. Box 825, Hanalei, Hawaii 96714. Kauai Community Radio, listening to you.
And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. So, hi, Marshall.
Felicia, good day to you.
Good day to you, and hi, Eric.
Aloha.
Hey, Eric.
Aloha, Mr. Marshall.
Word up.
So, what the word up is I want to share a few of these announcements of things that are coming up. One is that I'm going to go to tomorrow night is another effort from the citizens group to deal with bringing in more citizen input. This isn't run by the county. It's just groups of neighborhood associations for the general plan update. They're having a meeting tomorrow at the Lihui Neighborhood Center from 6 to 8 p.m. And I see something in your lap, Eric.
Yeah. Saturday the 28th, and every last Saturday of the month from 4 to 6 p.m. is the Aina Ho's Community Parks Mini Golf's presentation of their Kilauea Night Market. It's a great time to enjoy beautiful art, local artisans, high quality, beautiful music, and of course that Ono Ono food. If you need more information, you can always go to theainaho.org. That's ANINAHOU.ORG. Or, of course, you can give one call at 825-24118.
All right. And then Tulsi Gabbard's team. Tulsi isn't going to be there directly herself, but her staff, she does these talk stories. And so tomorrow, Wednesday, January 25th, she will have people there at the Coffee, Bean, and Tea Kapa'a. It's a restaurant. I see that she kind of helps support local businesses by moving around from 11:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. And so if there's any issues that are important, and I know for many people there's a lot of issues that are important at the Fed level, that's a time to be able to be with her team there, and among that will be Kaolana Finn. She'll be there, and so that's a way to get awareness out.
That was in Kapaa?
Kapaa, mm-hmm. She has them pretty often, actually.
Perfect.
Yeah, but there's too many important things at the house, so she couldn't come. She had to stay back and vote.
Well, it's good that they still have someone to come represent us here on our level here on Kauai to say, hey, we're here to listen to what you have to, what's going on.
And there's these mahi'ai workshops. Mahi'ai is the Hawaiian word for farming, and the farming, this workshops is most core directed at the Hawaiian community, the Kanaka Maoli community, because it's regarding Department of Hawaiian Homeland.
DHHL recipients in particular,
and the Office of Hawaiian Affairs is a co-sponsor with Malama Kauai. But the Thursday event, which is 8 to 4 p.m., is going to be held at Kealia Farms. Last week I said it was going to be at Anahola Clubhouse. It's not. It's
going to
be
moved.
Kealia Farms. And it's also going to be at Keikaha Neighborhood Center on Friday.
Right. So those are both from 8 to 4 this Thursday in Kealia Farms. And then again at Keikaha Neighborhood Center from 8 to 4. This workshop is going to be quite comprehensive for those that are DHHL recipients that are looking to farm. There's going to be some really great resources for those that are interested, in particular from DHHL recipients, looking for resources in particular with farm training, internships, certifications, risk management, grants, low interest loans for farmers, technical and business assistance for farmers, sales and marketing opportunities, etc. So if you are a DHHL recipient,
Department of Hawaiian Homelands,
thank you very much, Felisa, that is looking to become one farmer, this is a great opportunity for you to talk story and meet one-on-one with different organizations throughout Hawaii that provide resources to farmers. I know that there will be other great entities such as the NRCS,
which is National Resource Conservation
Service, which is a federal government program to help farmers. There will be people like Go Farm Hawaii, which is a farmer training program. There will be other institutions that deal with business consultations. So great opportunity to go check out some resources for those in the Hawaiian community that want to farm.
And you're going to be there too, right?
Yeah, I will be there as the program coordinator for Go Farm here on the island of Kauai to help those that are interested in getting some more technical and hands-on experience, get fortified in the skill sets of the science and business side of production agriculture.
Hey, and I got a really good little public service announcement here.
Do-do-do!
Are you interested in growing your own food? Are you striving towards a more sustainable living? Go Farm Hawaii is an agricultural training program offering those interested in farming a combination of knowledge, experience, skills, and support to assist them in becoming viable production growers. For more information, come to Go Farm's AgCurious Seminar on Wednesday, February 22nd from 6 to 8 p.m. RSVP info at gofarmhawaii.org. Or 245-8318.
So that voice sounds familiar. He's laughing there. Eric, you're the core instructor.
I'm the core instructor, farm coach, coordinator, a little bit of everything here on Kauai. I'm the Kauai delegate, if you will, for Go Farm.
Yeah, so thank you so much for that.
Mahalo.
Hey, Felicia, what I wanted to mention is the Affordable Care Act open enrollment for 2017 ends on January 31st. So there's one more week if you want to go to healthcare.gov and check out what that might look like for you.
I thought it was over with already.
Yeah, they extended it.
Okay.
What they usually do.
And that's going to be an interesting dynamic because you might have noticed that we had a change of administration at the presidential level.
Really?
Yeah.
New president?
New president. And what I read is that the Senate, 48 to 51, moved to pull back a whole lot of the key aspects of it, like pre-existing conditions, being able to put your kid on your insurance till he or her, she is at 26 years old, whole big amount of pieces that the Senate voted in favor of repealing. Now it has to go to the House. Have you followed that?
You know, actually, you mentioned that before, and I meant to look it up because I have not seen that. I actually doubt that. Let me look it up.
Okay, so we'll have you look it up. And hopefully it really won't get repealed until there is a good replacement. And as they say that they want to replace it, we'll replace it first, you know, do it kind of one-on-one. Another thing that is coming up is the Wailua Kapa'a Neighborhood Association meetings, and they're really good. They're on Saturdays. Do you ever go to that? He's smiling. That's a no. You can say it. No. You live in Kalaheo. It's okay.
I live in Kalaheo.
It's okay. Well, I just want to really honor what that group does. There's a Kilauea Neighborhood Association does good meetings, too. But Kaiana Hall from the Planning Department, he's the Deputy Planning Director. He's going to be there and be talking about these additional rental units to see. It's opening it up to see who, which communities want to do it. It's something that has gone before the county council. Housing is such a crisis. I like that they're using the word crisis. So many people cannot find a home. You know, it's near impossible to find a home for many people, even if you have money sometimes.
Just because you have money doesn't even mean you can find a home in this day and age. We have so few rentals available, and the ones that we have available are so stringent in their regulations. The prices are at a... You know, even if you're a working family, you know...
No dogs, no kids,
No kids, whatever you, like, call it. Or, you know, just because you're making money doesn't mean you're making enough money to survive. I mean, most of my adult life, it's been... I've just been barely above the poverty level where you're just lucky to make ends meet to buy a can of Spam after you paid rent for the rest of the month.
Right. So with this additional rental unit, have you followed that? What it's looking at is it's in the early stages, so nobody has to panic if they don't like the idea. But for lots that are 6,000 square feet or less, to allow a 400-square-foot additional rental unit, and it's, you know, not supposed to be vacation rental or anything like that. Now, it might be hard to enforce. That happens to be one of the concerns about it, but... that is it. And if it's above 6,000 square feet, the land, then you could put an 800 square foot additional rental unit. And it's got stipulations that are going, all right, we have to make sure that the infrastructure is in place, but it's a concentration. The county doesn't actually have to pay for the housing because people would be making that investment. Many people are really kind of already doing that, and it helps to legalize what's already done.
Right. I think what we're talking about here is looking at how do we have a, you know, how do we make lemons into lemonade? And we already recognize, like you're saying, that people are doing things. There's a crisis. The county can't afford to set up all this infrastructure on their own. There's obviously an apparent need, I think. They said something like, we need at least 500 additional dwellings a year?
Well, that's their goal, is
right,
to go
right.
five...
And so if that's our goal, and the county can't afford that, how do we, again, turn lemons into lemonade? And I know there isn't one clear-cut answer, but if we can all work together collaboratively, I think this is one step towards the right direction of where we need to be going.
And when people are going to be building an Ohana unit for somebody in their family...
Right.
You know, then it's no longer illegal for them to do it. So that is something, and that's happening Saturday from 2 to 4 at the Kapa'a Library Meeting Room.
That's this Saturday?
That's this Saturday. And so you don't have to be from Kapa'a or Wailua to go. You can go and...
It's a global... it's an island-wide.
It's an island-wide piece, though each presentation is going to be more focused on that particular community. And they don't have... the legal wording really written yet. It's in the early stages, but I applaud them for looking and reaching to people.
Yeah, so I was taking a look at that.
About the Affordable Care Act.
Felicia. Yeah, and it, on Thursday in the wee hours, by a vote of 51 to 48, they approved a budget resolution. And if that resolution passes the House and then is signed by... Trump, it kicks off a budget reconciliation process. And that works for them because it's not subject to filibuster. So that's what they can do right away and do it fast.
And so did I get it right? Is gutting
wrong.
The... Okay, all right.
Yeah.
Thank you. I got the 48-51 right.
Budget reconciliation only allows Congress to repeal parts of the bill, the parts that deal with how much the government spends or taxes people. So it can't repeal, for example, the parts of the bill that allow young adults to stay on their parents' insurance or the rule saying companies couldn't deny coverage for people with pre-existing conditions.
So they can't take those two things away?
Yeah, not yet.
So, okay. Marshall, just to hear you right, we're not getting rid of the Affordable Care Act, if they will. They're just kind of slimming or cutting off a little bit of the fat off of the edges. It's still there, more or less, right?
Oh, yeah, it's still there. Yeah, it's right. Going to be a long process to actually, if what... But now they're talking about not actually getting rid of it.
Right. So one person once told me is that they're trying to get rid of Obamacare, but they heard they're going to replace it with this thing called the Affordable Care Act.
Yeah, right?
Right.
That was a joke, though. So, yeah. So, okay, well, we'll have to follow that. So it's not as bad as it can kind of sound.
No, it may get bad.
If people are still interested in applying for the Affordable Care Act, it wouldn't be a waste of time for them to apply then.
No, the program is still there.
There you go.
You can still get insurance for 2017. And you know what? The new president... actually has claimed that everyone in the country is going to have insurance. So, we'll have to balance that with,
Well, that's hopeful.
Reality.
Perfect.
Yeah, that's hopeful. I mean, I think, and that's one of my frames on this show, is there's a lot of stuff going on, and some of it's really disturbing, whether it's at a national level or just right even here on the North Shore. But... how do we look at picking the best parts out of it and giving that breath and trying to, limit some of the other pieces? When we were talking about housing, I just want to say I went to the county council meeting last Wednesday, and there was a discussion about the Hanamaulu affordable housing coming in, and I'm going to give credit to the council. You know, they were looking at, 469,000. That's not really very affordable, right? Or we can look at that as gas housing.
This is the housing project that's being built towards the airport at the intersection right there?
It's there near King Kamoli'i School.
Right.
And it goes all the way over to Kapolei Highway. Mm-hmm. So it is that. And, the county is getting $6 million to be putting into it, to be bringing the price down, and that brings it down to, like, $479,000. It's not easy, so they were looking at all different kinds of ways. Can they make these into, like, duplexes? They really are looking at what they can do, and something that came up in that meeting is the dilemma of, I'll call myself a miscellaneous person, but people who aren't born here, raised here, like oftentimes people who maybe even go on Craigslist from the continent or moved here 3 months ago get on the list. And so that's discouraging for the county in that their highest goal is to take the people who've lived here for a long time and try and get them into this housing, and a lot of times those aren't the people who sign up on the list. And so there's a lot of challenges, and they grapple with this, and, the market economy that's out there is very tough. Something that we'll go into a little bit later in the show is how it's almost like if you work in this economy, you almost can't afford to live here. It's easier to live here. I mean, it's easier to have a home here if you don't live here.
Correct.
Or if you are completely economically independent of what's here, it's easier to have a home. And the younger you are, the harder that is. And so
yeah.
It's really important It's not a call to action, but it's important. When I'm giving these lists of events that happen, if people show up and participate, that's how we make change. And we'll talk in a little bit about, like, the big marches that happened this weekend. And, you know, marching and showing up for things like that, there's a lot of value in it. But then when that march is over, what's really important is that you are participating in your community association, in your general plan updates, and all, you know, going to the county council, working with the legislature. There's a lot of legislative bills that are coming out now, too. I see that there's more of the forced vaccination stuff is on the table. That's really uncomfortable for me.
At the state level?
At the state level. And we can talk about that a little bit on another show. But I see they tried to do that last year, and, you know, that's coming up again. One positive, from my perspective, on the new president, he who shall not be named, is the appointment of Robert Kennedy Jr. to be looking at the vaccination issues.
Hmm.
And Robert Kennedy Jr. is very much looking at, is there a corollary? I'm not saying there is, but is there, and looking at the very compelling corollaries that are there with autism and health risks with vaccinations. And so even I looked at the Center for Disease Control, the last published number was 2011, and it had gone to 1 out of 68 kids or somewhere on that autism spectrum disorder, where 5 years earlier it was 1 out of 111, and, you know, 20 years earlier it was 1 out of 10,000. So we really are moving at a rapid pace, almost exponential pace, at that particular, I don't know if that's what you call that, epigenetic. I shouldn't use big words when I'm not qualified to use that word. But when people are having things that might look genetic, but epigenetic, I believe, that you're a master's in life sciences, that it's something that happens to you that might influence your genetic structure as life happens to you. You don't necessarily show up with it presenting.
So another way of looking at it is you go bathe in a bowl full of poison. You may have not had something toxic in you before, but now you can spread that to the next generation. Is that what you're saying?
Is that epigenetics?
I have no idea.
Okay.
I'm a plant scientist.
Marshall's looking it up.
Epigenetics is the study of changes in organisms caused by modification of gene expression rather than alteration of the genetic code itself.
What I do know as a plant scientist is that when genes are exposed to certain environmental conditions, the way that a gene expresses itself, whether that's physically, like the way that your hair turns or your skin turns, or is that is what epigenetics is. So again, it goes back to that, hey, you know, my dad went swimming where the tugboats were, they used to let out the poison, and now he's got some kind of hoo-hoo going on
that caused a problem,
right? So yes, epigenetic.
Okay, all right, well, thank you for that. So two more announcements that I have of what's going on right now. One is Alakai o Kauai, the new public charter school, is now officially accepting applications for K through 5. There is a plan for this school to be in the Kealia area. It's probably going to be in a temporary location at the very beginning, but you can go to Alakai, Alakaiokauai, alakaiokauai.org, and you can enroll then. Many people have been asking. That's up. It's ready. There's a phone number online there, too. You can call for questions, and it is on my Facebook page. And perhaps Marshall can take that and copy that on to the Kauai community radio page for people who don't know about it, and then or want to look at that and aren't on my Facebook page. And then I want to also point out that the Office of Environmental Quality Control, they put out something called the State Environmental Notice. So it came out now. And I noticed that there is a long-range strike weapons systems evaluation program that they are taking public commentary for, quote, taking marine mammals incidental to that long-range strike weapons system. So this is the Air Force requesting authorization to take marine mammal incidentals.
Felicia,
when they're conducting munitions testings for their long-range strike missile system.
Kalamai, Felicia, but could you maybe elaborate for those who don't know when they say incidental taking of marine mammals?
Well, that can mean killing. Taking can mean something less than killing. Maybe they just blow their ears out, right? Maybe they just get hit with something. They can be damaged. They can be frightened out of their area. That would be a soft impact, is that they're bummed out and don't want to be in that area.
Right.
They go, hey, let's get out of here. There's a problem. So it's anywhere from causing them to shift where their migratory patterns are, for example, or the breeding things, to death.
So what we're looking at, just to clarify with you, is that an incidental take is changing the pattern of, in this case, marine mammals' habitat and behavior, more or less?
Yes, or die.
Die. I mean, I didn't want to say that, but just to give a broad perspective is that, you know, it's like saying, hey, Eric, you walking down the street today, and forget about walking down the street today, you can't walk down the street anymore.
Basically.
Right.
And if you do walk down this street in this pathway,
you might die.
You might die.
Okay.
So they're looking at this. This is going to start September of 2017 through August of 2022. So it's coming from PMRF in the Barking Sands area. So, Marshall, can you also take that off my page? It's on my Facebook page, Felicia Longy Cowden, and place it on the Kauai Community Radio Facebook page. So, because it tells you how to send public testimony, and it's kind of, you know, it's not that easy of a name to have. It's itp.mccue@noaa.gov, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration.gov. So it's NOAA that you would be expressing your opinion to, saying whether you're not happy with the taking of the marine mammals. I would assume that they're going to be taking all kinds of other creatures too, but the marine mammals are sort of our evolutionary cousins, you know.
If you look at it, that would be the broadest impact. From a size of species in the ocean, our marine mammals are kind of the largest organisms in the ocean.
Whales, seals, dolphins.
Not to say that there isn't a whole other cumulative impacts that could happen with these things, but just, if you will, marine mammals are the indicative of the greater ecosystem, and that's why they use that as a, if you will, an indicator species.
And you're listening to KKCR Hanalei KAQA Kilauea, Felicia, Marshall, and Eric Hansen on Kauai Soapbox.
That link is on your Facebook timeline right now,
mm-hmm.
today?
It's called, it's just below, it's called oeqc.doc.hawaii.gov. It's a little thin box there. So we'll make sure it gets up there. So we're talking about the public process and what does it mean and what does it tell us. And in just a few minutes, Eric, one of the reasons I have you on the show is that you were a witness at the 30-meter telescope contested case hearings last week, and you were in there along with Dr. Kay Howe Abad. I'm going to play a few of her testimonies. And I want to tie that into what we're looking at the marine mammal issue, because when there is a public process, often what happens is, I don't want to say it's a two-tiered system of justice, it's a multi-tiered system of justice in the United
Right.
States. And so if you are on the big team, the big corporate team, it's like you don't have to do much more than do a copy and paste of something 3 inches thick, turn it in, nobody's going to look at
it. A check mark.
A check mark said, hey, we checked on if it's okay with the people. We did that. We announced it. You know, we didn't have very many people respond. The community must be okay with this use. Also, whenever something is a federal thing, you know, a voice from Ohio is equal to a voice from Kekaha. And so we'll be looking more deeply at what happened with the contested case hearings. But before we go there, I want to just talk a little bit about the national stuff. He's smiling at me. I don't know if you had something you wanted to share there.
I don't know if you want to go there right now, but I do have to say that, you know, I'll let you continue on with your thought process or your streamline of thought when we get to where we're going.
With the contested case hearings?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I know that the major news is doing really strong jobs on the new first few days of President Trump's administration. We've seen even just in yesterday, or was it today, he signed the authorization for the XL pipeline and the Dakota Access Pipeline.
Fast-tracked the Dakota Access Pipeline.
Right, yeah. Fast-tracked both of those.
Yeah. And he's a heavy investor in the Dakota Access Pipeline, and the head, Kelsey Warren, is a big donor
right.
to Donald Trump.
So to put it in perspective, the Dakota Access Pipeline gave something like a million. I'm just going to give this, just to put it in proportions, it was something like he gave him like, the Dakota Access Pipeline gave Trump $1 million for his campaign, whereas Trump has something like $10 million in proportion. Like, the scale is that Trump has more invested in the Dakota Access Pipeline than the Dakota Access Pipeline has invested in Trump.
That's correct. I think those numbers aren't...
The numbers are not correct, but the point is that there's... Trump has more money invested in the pipeline than the pipeline has invested in Trump. So, essentially, Trump is...
He's an investor in it. And we saw that, you know, Hillary Clinton actually had a relationship with the pipeline, and
right.
Barack Obama didn't really step in at a very meaningful level to protect the Lakota people, the indigenous people who are fighting the pipeline going right underneath their key source of water, whereas the year earlier, when it was originally designed to go under Bismarck people, the town, said, no, we don't want this. They're like, okay, fine, let's move it under the Indians. So they just moved it down the way, and that is, I think, an example of the reckless capitalism that just runs the system, and so it is a thread of what the discussion on the show is about today relative to how we treat the connection of the land between the indigenous people who have been here for, you know, 1,000 years and that culture with what it is to bring in international business. And it's not like only people with the cocoa or the bloodline can care about the land or be learning to connect that way. But that's the host culture, the Hawaiian culture, is at its most core on that. So... that's a piece on Trump. And do either one of you guys want to share something about Donald Trump? Because I also want to talk about what happened on the Big Island this week. But I know I'm. But here's that's the big broad brushstroke of what's going on.
Yeah.
In
now,
the
generally,
world.
If somebody has something other than Trump to talk about, I'm like, yeah, go.
All right.
What you got?
my monologue on this, and I'm sure we all have thought about this long and hard enough, is no sense try waste our energy on something that's just going to feed negativity. Let's bring out the positivity in things, which is what this show is all about. Let's talk about how to make oranges into orange juice if we're looking at people that have orange faces. And let's imua and move forward.
Okay. Well, I do want to say that... The what's called the Women's March, and so on. There's a Million Woman March. That's a play on words of what happened with Martin Luther King doing a Million Man March. And so sometimes people think it's really only about women. Well, anything that has to do with women has to do with men, too. What's good for men is good for women. What's good for women is good for men.
Absolutely.
And I would say probably 40%, 35% of the people who showed up nationally and globally were men. So men, we love you too. We know that it's not really a gender thing, but that was a big piece here, and there has been a strong element that is denigrating to women, whether it's intentionally or just old style culture. It's noticed.
Mm-hmm.
Just like when there is denigration to different communities that have been marginalized over the centuries or millennia, at least the centuries. I felt like what this march was about was saying, at least this was for me, is we're standing together. So before, you know, Latinas are treated like bad people that need to be exported, well, we all stand with them. If there's the threat of a registry of people of a certain faith, well, we'll all stand with them. And it is a statement to all those who are marginalized to say, you know what, we're standing together, fear not.
Right.
Well, it's time that something needs to happen right now if there's actually going to be effective action to protect women's rights, because funding to any organization overseas that provides abortion will not be cut.
And I want to jump in that's not like the only women's right. You know, like that's what I find that the right wing says, is that like women's rights comes down to one of the most heartbreaking, terrible circumstances that people are facing. And like when you look at Planned Parenthood, that is a minor, minor fraction of the services they provide.
That's right. And these places in a lot of places around the world are the only health care that women can get. And that's reality. That just happened, that money's gone for them. A lot of the places will close, and they're saying that a lot of women actually will die because of that.
That's powerful.
I had
to pause on that one.
Yeah.
That's heavy. What I'm seeing is getting cut, too, is services for abuse to women. And there are, I mean, men get abused, too, but there's more domestic violence and more effective domestic violence from men to women than typically from women to men. I think that's a fraction, too. I know it can happen, and I care about guys who can get hurt, and that's not that I don't care about that, but that there's laws
right.
and things that they're wanting to change in terms of protecting women from abuse.
I'd like to just think about this Women's March as more than just looking at it as human perspective, but let's look at this as the greater female, our Mother Earth.
Yeah.
You know, this Women's March movement was not just looking at the human species, but looking at everything from a greater lens, which I believe is what this show is all about. If we look at our Mother Earth as our feminine creature who provides all for us, it's definitely a time of, if I could use the word, assault that is about to happen amongst our Earth in many different places.
And continues to happen.
And continues to happen. And this march is a greater symbol for how we need to be looking at things from not just one perspective, from a greater global or more holistic or more kako lens, whatever you like call them, inclusive of everything. And it's not just here with this Women's March. This is something that at least I feel since the time I've been activated here within this radio station, is that there's been many different movements going on that are all been culminating to this moment right now with the Women's March, showing that there is many individual items that are part of a greater lens of what we need to be addressing, not only here on Kauai, in Hawaii, in the United States, but as a universe.
And the numbers I've seen, probably on the larger end of the estimates, but you know, the estimates of who all came out was like about 3.3 million to 5 million people, like the largest single event for a public statement that has happened.
Yeah, I took a look at the numbers. About 4.8 million global, 1 in 100 people in the United States participated in one of these marches. We had 500,000 in D.C. alone.
Yeah, so that's a big deal. So extending from what Eric was saying about that, an example of abuse of the earth, hardship on a culture, which would be the Kanaka Maoli culture, and in this case at the 30-meter telescope, it's not that a telescope is such a bad thing or even a bad thing. It's an expensive thing, but it is the avoidance and the manipulative spin around what is required. So, Eric, you were there on Hawaii Island last Thursday, and can you introduce the speaker that I want to play a few clips from? This is Dr. Kehaulani Abad.
Okay, so this is from last Thursday, the 17th, I'm sorry, the 19th. Dr. Kehaulani Abad is a archaeologist and also a cultural practitioner,
an anthropologist.
She has studied Hawaiian studies for a long time, all that kind of stuff. She was the first person to testify on Thursday last week regarding why we should not develop the 30-meter telescope on Mauna Kea based on how the archaeological study done in the final environmental impact statement for the 30-meter telescope was incomplete in the way that the archaeological study should have been done. And that really has to go looking into the lens of how archaeology needs to be done, how it is actually required by law, and how in the environmental impact statement that was finalized and approved by the state of Hawaii is that study was incomplete, and because essentially what Dr. Abad is telling us, and what you'll hear later on, it's saying that, you know, some guy was like, oh, well, I see this, but I really have no context of where I'm coming from here, so this is what I see. Pow, check mark. There was a couple rocks over here. But, you know, if you're going to do your due diligence, whether you come from an indigenous perspective or you're from an outside perspective, is that you go out there and you really do understand the nuances, and you don't just say from afar, okay, this is what I saw. You actually go check in with that community, or you go check in with the indigenous people of that area. I don't want to introduce much more than that. Felicia, maybe.
Okay, so what I'm hearing is that she's bringing up this point about the lens between, I learned two new words, emic and edic. So one is when an assessment is made from within the culture, which would be edic, and when an assessment is made from outside the culture, which is emic. And that's going to build for us in a second lens that we're going to listen to from her about the impact of profoundly disrespecting a culture. And when I listened to what she had to say, I thought, okay, you know, this applies to a whole lot more than a telescope in a mountain. You know, she was able to sort of quantify what is a challenge. So let's see if we can pull her up well here.
Of impacts the rest of the area. So you can't just look right here. So there's a lot of compelling reasons to look at a regional perspective. This bridges into another major point I'd like to make, which is that the role of a cultural perspective is absolutely necessary in all levels of analysis, and this is what anthropologists and archaeologists will refer to as emic perspectives.
I'm sorry, that word is?
EMIC, E-M-I-C, and it is juxtaposed in contrast to ETIC perspectives, E-T-I-C. And it's a dichotomy that's used to describe the fact that there are perspectives that people have looking at another culture and kind of saying, oh, that's very interesting how those people do things. I think this about what they're doing. That's an ETIC perspective. And there's EMIC perspectives, which is, this is why within my set of beliefs, I do what I do and I believe what I believe and I feel what I feel and I know what I know.
Is that an acronym for something?
Oh, no, it's
a word.
It's anthropological jargon. Yeah, it's a term of art within
Thank
anthropology.
You.
But it's very important from a historic preservation approach. So in historic preservation, if you look at the laws and you look at what's there, it's very clear that an EMIC perspective is necessary. For instance, if you look at the five types of significance, there's criterion A, B, C, D, E, and this is in the administrative rules that describe how you define significance. So it's chapter 13-284-6. And you get to criterion E, which is item 5, and it says that it to have an important value to the native Hawaiian people or to another ethnic group of the state due to associations with cultural practices once carried out or still carried out at the property or due to associations with traditional beliefs, events, or oral accounts. These associations being important to the group's history and cultural identity. So if I'm not born, raised, imbued with that cultural perspective from my upbringing, I cannot say, oh, these people, they don't think it's significant. I won't check off criterion E. I think it's important just for B because it's associated with, in this case, the lives of important persons, or the more common one, D. It's yielded information or likely to yield information important for research. So I can just study it, write it down, save it on paper, save a picture, and that's all that's important about it. It's just important for criterion D. But if I don't ask someone from within the culture, is this important to you? Then as an archaeologist, I've not done my job. And so one of the biggest problems with the way the reports have been done is that the two functions of talking to Hawaiians, knowledgeable, and looking at sites has been bifurcated. So you have archaeologists doing reports on sites, and then you have some really great ethnohistoric reports about Hawaiian traditions and interviews with people. So Mali and Mali, Kepa Mali and Onauno Mali, have done some great, great research on the latter. And it preceded the research that was done on the detailed archaeological findings. And the way the research was conducted is that people were asked, tell us about why Mauna Kea is important. And they never were asked, here, this is what we found when we looked at the archaeology. Here's a picture. Here's a report. Come, let's go look. Let's go look in person. What do you folks think? That important step to bridge the two never occurred. And so you had archaeologists saying, oh, I don't think that's going to be a significant impact. This planned project, no significant impact. And when you look at the context of what's actually happening, that the TMT Observatory, the plant batch site, the access way, are all part of, they all reside within a known historic district, the Mauna Kea Summit Region Historic District.
Okay, could I ask you to summarize in about a minute?
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, and I'm going to, that is Dr. Kehaulani Abad, and she is speaking at the 30-meter telescope contested court hearings, and Eric, you were there that day, and so what she's framing out right there is, I thought, a very good explanation of how come, you know, when they hire people, the archaeologists that you know, learned in a place far away, and who, you know, we've seen doesn't even show much curiosity with the person who put in the main archaeological statement. They're not even really looking at it. All they're looking at is going, okay, there's some rocks there, there's some rocks there, there's some rocks there. The building's not going on top of it, so there's no significant impact.
Right. And one of the things that we could listen to this whole three-hour testimony by Dr. Abad, but just to summarize one of her notions that she brought up is that just because you see a pile of stones that may delineate an Ahu doesn't mean that there aren't other areas archaeologically that aren't significant. And just because you can't see them because there isn't a what you would see as a physical feature from one perspective doesn't mean it's not there. And one of the beautiful things that Dr. Abad talked about is that it's not just this one feature, even if it was, oh, this Ahu or this stone feature here, it's about the greater significance and the connection between all that. And again, looking at things from a greater lens, which goes back to not just this issue here on Mauna Kea, but a lot of, or every single issue that we look at in this world right now, because people, especially from the industry aspect of things, look at it from one-sided, which is very shortcoming.
Saying, how can we make this happen?
Right.
How can we make it happen?
And if you will, from them, that's not even sustainable for them because it's only short-term gains. And if you're going to look at it from the long-term, you need to look at it from the greater picture, even if you are to develop. And so foolish upon those from these industries to only look at it from a one-sided part, even for their own sakes, regardless of whether it's for the greater Kako, which obviously we need to be moving forward for the greater aspect
for everybody. Kako is like everyone.
So with that in mind, I think, Felicia, you have some other things that you'd like to bring out here.
I'm just going to play one more clip with Pua Case examining her, and it gets a little emotional as it goes on, but this is like when you want to talk about reality television. I turn this stuff on; it consumes my day because it is these powerful statements that are coming out between both the industry and the practitioners. And Pua Case, who is, you know, very profoundly a high profile figure in protecting the Mauna Kea. And she's been going around working with indigenous people and particularly indigenous women around North America in different areas. But she is asking Kehaulani Abad, who in earlier parts describes her childhood growing up under a father who does amazing things for the culture and having a lot of perspective to this and what it feels like as an archaeologist, anthropologist, when bones are taken away and moved, and when she's both apologizing to the bones and apologizing to the families. And here she's being asked about what is it comparatively, the mountain itself, to the Kupuna Ivi, which is basically means, you know, the bones of the ancestors. And so we have two powerful women speaking. This is an amazing time to be alive. What's going on, just like the Women's March was an amazing time. There's a lot being revealed in these contested case hearings. So here's Pua Case speaking to Dr. Kehaulani Abad, archaeologist, anthropologist, cultural practitioner. Hold on.
I just have two more questions. When you referenced my testimony in the first contested case hearing, the question that William Ayla posed to me was, would I still go there if the TMT was built? Is that correct?
Yes.
Do you recall that I asked him if that was a trick question?
Yes.
My question is, with your experience and your expertise, what happens to a people when they have to change from honoring a place to asking forgiveness of a place because they feel guilt or helplessness or failure?
When those instances occur, the kaumaha, the heaviness, the sadness, the weight of what has happened weighs very heavily on the shoulders, the na'o, the very core of people's being, and it creates a consistent sadness and eha, hurt in the character of this being, of this person. For some, it can turn into anger and create a lot of behavior that comes out as what we might say as rebellious type of actions. I think for others, it's just a consistent inability to feel self-efficacy. And we see that in our people. If what's important to us is not honored, if our voice is not honored, we have people who don't have a feeling of self-worth. And I didn't want to say this earlier, but I'll give you a really specific example. I think it's germane. My most, I would say, important kind of work that I've done has to do with burials and a lot of work with Huimalama, when it was formed, it's recently been sunsetted, but it's a parallel situation. So we've had to go to places and talk to kupuna who were removed from their burials, and having to talk to these kupuna and apologize for them not being whole, apologize for their not being where they came from, apologize for not knowing where they came from, and begging their forgiveness and trying to show them as much aloha as possible. It's a very, very difficult thing. And this is essentially the same thing that's going to happen for not being able to take care of our akua and our, and their kinola of the pu'u and the mauna. It'll be worse because we're talking about, in this case, you know, at least I'm talking to another kanaka and I can beg this kanaka's forgiveness and I can kanu this kanaka and feel like, okay, I know where you are. I will continue to malama your place. But if now we're talking about an akua and the kind of damage is irreparable, how do I ever make it right again? And what is that going to do to me and my, how I feel about being a kanaka?
With your experience, okay, how about, what happens to the feeling and integrity of the place when it no longer hears the honoring songs, but hears instead the forgiveness or no song at all. What happens to the place, the spirit of the place?
I hesitate to even imagine that. I worry that its whole life essence will be fundamentally lost or changed in a way that we can never experience again, or Mo'opuna will never know it to be like we once knew it. And something of eternal value for our Lahui will forever be lost.
Kehawabad, I don't apologize that I had to ask you that, because I feel that you understand that I needed to ask you. And so I'm ending by saying, do you understand why I needed to ask you those last questions? And do you understand that with the family relations we have between us tied to our Vahikupuna or Kohala, I have asked these questions in honor of all that you do and all that you are, and with the deepest of aloha. And do you understand that?
And mahalo for listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea. This is Felicia Marshall with Kauai Soapbox. Eric Hansen is in the studio with us. And then we were just hearing between two cultural practitioners, Antipua Case, cross-examining anthropologist Dr. Kehau Abad. And that was at the TMT, the 30-meter telescope contested case hearings. In a few, about 5 or 6 minutes, Council Member Mason Chalk is going to join us as we talk about what's moving forward in our area, and with extra respect towards the Kanaka Mo'oli, the Hawaiian people. Eric, who was there, Eric, how did it feel to be at that? Right in the room. I've been watching it, but I'm watching it through Naleo television, cable access television, live. So shout out to them. How is it there being there?
Well, I think hearing just the tone of Dr. K. Howell's voice would sum up to me how my emotions were being there. It was definitely a tearjerker the whole time. Emotionally draining. Kind of like that roller coaster where you're going up the hill, you're like, oh my gosh, what's going to happen, what's going to happen, what's going to happen? And then you get on that roller coaster and you go, and you're along for the ride. And afterwards, you're really, really exhausted. But you can't sleep because things just keep on going through your mind. And you just keep on processing and reflecting and processing and reflecting. I've never had such a profound time of reflection, contemplation, emotional, physical exhaustion, spiritual enlightenment. Inspiration to do what's pono. And just try to be a better person.
When you were there, I could see that you had to come up and testify after her, and it was clear that you were feeling a lot of emotions when you came up to speak. Now, you were speaking in your 6 months of doing work, inventorying the lichen and the life species up there on the mountains. You want to just say a few things about that before we get Nathan Chalk? Because that was another example of what was put in on the paperwork.
Right.
That was very much an understatement and overlooking. And so you were able to share a little bit of information. Since you're in here,
right,
you might as
real
well share
fast, Kang. So I was tasked by the Office of Mauna Kea Management in 2011 to inventory all entire botanical flora, which is plants, trees, grasses, mosses, ferns, and lichens from 9,000 feet elevation at Halepuhaku, which is the visitor center, all the way up to the top of the mountain where the telescopes and everything else is supposed to be, or is proposed to be. The final EIS, the final environmental impact statement for the 30-meter telescope was essentially just a review of research that was already done on the mountain, which is not complete research, only done in the lower regions of the mountain. The work that we did, which was published after the final environmental impact statement, was never brought into this review process. The work that was done there was incomplete, essentially another check mark. The Office of Mauna Kea Management and the 30-meter telescope lawyers try to portray myself as just a person having vested interest in trying to get more work up on the mountain, saying, oh, what, you guys like more work? Yeah, you think we should do more studies? Yeah, so that would mean more jobs for you. And I was like, excuse me, sir, no, that doesn't mean more work for me. I'm just interested in what's going on for the greater health of this earth. I already have a really good job. And again, it's just another way for the Office of Mauna Kea Management to have a check mark, even for the work that we got commissioned for. It was in response to the community saying, hey, how come you guys never did nothing? And then they said, okay, we put this check mark, we did this work, and then put it up on their website. It was a publication, but never reviewed it to anything.
And they didn't say, hey, there is endemic lichen and endemic life forms that are underneath in these little pockets of water at almost 14,000 feet in the most isolated piece of land anywhere. And so here is some starts of life.
In the short time frame that we have, more or less, that is the cliff notes of what we're talking about here. Again, it goes back to a check mark thing. I've had people email me since this testimony as like, internet trolls being like, excuse me, Mr. Hansen, how come you didn't bring this up earlier? You have some kind of vested interest in at play here. And it's like, no, brah, I don't. Kalamai, 7 years ago, I wasn't aware of what was going on. I had other things going on. And it's
right.
The whole.
And you did put it up, though, like 6 months ago. We did a whole show on it. Where there was a video. There was
was almost 2.5 years ago already now.
Okay,
but
long time.
Still, the point is that people are trying to say, okay, we did this as the check mark, but we're not actually. It's like we built it, but there's no point in building, like having this structure being built here in the first place. It's just a check mark.
Right, and you were just part of a gesture.
Part
of a gesture, and then when you actually did find some significant things,
right,
it was painful for you
right,
to see it ignored.
And that's my motivation, is that, hey, I go sacrifice myself in a physically dangerous environment, and our work does not get acknowledged, and therefore the work that was done is not actual work, it's just a review of literature, which is not complete literature in the first place, and to justify a project that probably shouldn't go in, given the cultural and environmental sensitivity of the area.
So thank you for going over and testifying on that, and
appreciate
thank
it.
You for standing up and for coming in here. And we're going to hear about our underwriters, and I believe Council Member Mason Chalk will be with us when we come back. Eric is going to stay in here with us, but Kauai Soapbox is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with the Copper Man. And we're going to hear about the Hoike Hula Concert.
KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K224CQ Anahola, K284AL Haleiwa.
Aloha, listeners of KKCR. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, your daily grassroots global news hour, urging you to support Kauai Community Radio. KKCR has been broadcasting from their jungle shack and building community in the island since 1997. Please show your love for KKCR by making an investment in the station that loves you. Your support at any level will pay dividends all year long and ensure the continued success of Kauai Community Radio. From our family at Democracy Now! To your ohana in the center of the Pacific, mahalo for your support. It really does make a difference.
The Copper Man. Copper, stainless steel, and galvanized aluminum. We specialize in ornamental and custom work and fabricate and install any kind sheet metal work, residential and commercial. Serving Kauai for over 30 years. We're still talking. HarryConti.com. That's HarryConti.com. Or 639-3456. PackYourTrash.org and SaveRCs.us.
The 25th annual Ho'ike Hula Concert presented by Kumu Hula Leilani Rivera Lo and Halau Hula o Leilani will be at Hawaii War Memorial Convention Hall in Lihue on February 4th. Crafts and food sales start at 5. The show starts at 7. An authentic cultural event of music, hula, and dances of Polynesia featuring hula students from Kauai, Oahu, Reno, Nevada, and Japan, and special guests the Maakaha Sons. Tickets for the 25th annual Ho'ike Hula Concert available at local outlets or call 651-0864.
And mahalo for listening to Kauai Community Radio. This is Felicia and Marshall with Kauai Soapbox. Mason, Councilmember Mason Chalk.
Hey, aloha.
Hey.
How are you?
Good. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day. I know that you're probably in between important events.
I'm headed to kick off for a community meeting, so I'm on the road with my earphones on. Hope that's okay. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you, and yeah, keeping your voice clear is a really important thing. So what community event are you going to in Kekaha?
Yes, it's Kekaha community event of solarized
okay.
Project.
All right, so that's great. They get solar panels. That's one of the benefits of being the recipient community for the landfill, correct?
That is correct.
Yeah, so there is some benefits that go out there, and I just want to really extend a giant mahalo to the people in Kekaha because they really are sitting on all our opala, and so for anybody out there, you're not throwing it away, you're giving it to Kekaha, so whatever you can do to reuse, recycle, or just don't buy it in the first place is a good thing because our landfill is almost full. So, Councilmember Chalk Mason, I don't know if you've been able to hear some of the earlier portion of our show, but we have been talking about the value of the indigenous culture and having a connection to the land. It doesn't only happen in Hawaii. It happens across this planet where people have lived for a very long time, generations, where they have a unique relationship with the land that sometimes is maybe not respected deeply enough by large industry.
Yeah. Well, you know, I tuned in just for the tail end of that testimony
mm-hmm.
that you shared. And I can't help but, you know, think that we haven't learned our lesson yet about where we need to integrate our native Hawaiian thought or native thought in general or ideals into the processes and the systems that we create at an early stage. And so, you know, I mean, when I think about Mauna Kea and fact that Antipua Kanaka'ole was once, you know, part of that decision-making process and then no longer included in it, it reminds me that you know, without the inclusion of this voice, that we will continue to come into these situations where are contentious, that bring up the painful you know, past and history that Native Hawaiians have been subjected to. since, you know, introduction or since the Westerners have been here.
Since the contact, yeah, contact with Western civilization.
That's correct.
And you have done so much in leadership training, and you have Kapuwai, is that correct? That's your youth program, your...
It's Kapuwai, leadership development.
Leadership development, and part of that is within the context of the host culture?
Yeah, you know, actually, when you really peel back the layers, our native cultures are universal in nature.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the values that I think are embedded in what I call 21st century leadership reside in our native thoughts. So, you know, the fact that it's an inclusive process, that leadership needs to be included by everyone, is something that I think resonates with, you know, some of what we talk about with Aloha. Some of what we talk about is Hawaiians being people of the world, not just this place.
Yes, and really, even for European people, we get, like, the blame for a lot of what isn't going right, and sometimes justifiably so. But really, when you look across Europe, same thing happened to them. Same displacement, same taking of language, same problems. It just happened longer ago enough that we're more domesticated, you know, and maybe more separated. But we all have that same core that really longs for nature, and I think particularly as people do transplant to this place, most of the time people come because they really feel a connection to the land, to the sea, and to what is here in a natural environment.
Yeah, apparently, you know, it's still evident here when you walk out your door that there's a strong connection. And so I think people gravitate to that. And yet, you know, I think that we're quickly changing the landscape of what we actually want here. So we've got it backwards, I think, sometimes, you know, our ideals and what we invest in.
And many times, though, some of the most fervent people at trying to protect how things were when they showed up are the people who have showed up, you know. So there is, you know, we have a challenge on that. And I'm going to be attending another general plan update meeting tonight and tomorrow, and I know that you are involved in that dialogue somewhat. And so when the county does a general plan, that's a visioning time. That's when there's a reach out to everybody to say, where do we want to end up and what's important to us? And I know that you have been pretty key in looking at that.
Yeah, we need community engagement more than ever in this plan. You know, it's for the next 20 years. We want to ensure, at least what I've heard in feedback, is that we want to see that this plan is not only something that sets a vision and policy towards that vision, but sets in some real actionable items, because it seems as if, and a lot of the feedback that we got or I've received, is that while it was a great written plan, the last plan, we're not sure if we really acted on a lot of the items that we said was important.
Yeah, and so there's an effort to put a little bit more teeth, or as you said, actionable items. And one thing that I said earlier in the show that I'm pleased with is that the council is really taking a hard look at the housing crisis that's here. And I think particularly for everybody, really. Almost everybody feels displaced, but the Kanaka Maoli community, the Native Hawaiian community, with either small or big N, I get scolded if I use that word, that they have a serious issue with the housing and, you know, forever waiting on the Department of Hawaiian Homelands list, as well as being pushed away from their beach and mountain access where they can live resiliently and be able to perpetuate, you know, their own knowledge of the land, their own culture, their own ways of being. And so it's important to get that really framed into this general plan, I feel.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, I think where we struggle is how do we actually specifically take action on these? So we can write all of our wish lists, and yet we have to understand where do we draw the line, or where is the line drawn for us and local government, and how can we impress upon this plan on the larger, you know, entities that reside over us, which is the state. And so, you know, some of what I've heard is really encouraging, because I've heard that, you know, planning commissioners are really seeking out in this next round, as it heads the planning commission, to engage with our state legislators, to engage with our representatives, our senator, to ensure that they are not only understanding where the direction is going, but to see what they can commit to at the state level to follow through on some of these specific needs that primarily sit within the state's jurisdiction.
And you know, something that has been really high profile this week, though it happens on an ongoing basis for a very long time, is the quiet title process, and particularly with the Kuleana lands, the lands that are part of the Mahele, the Great Mahele, and I believe that was 1948 when people are holding lands from 18. What did I say?
19.
Oh my gosh, 1848. Yes, 1848. That's what I meant. Mm-hmm. So, Mark Zuckerberg, who is a newer homeowner on our island, and you know, he has the distinction of being a very wealthy man. I think that I'm seeing them say sixth most wealthy person on the planet. So he's the founder of Facebook. He is getting a lot of blowback right now for an effort towards doing quiet titling on lands that are Kuleana lands within the 700 acres that he's purchased. Now, I do want to give him credit that normally when I think of quiet title, that quiet is the operative word there. Quiet title happens and nobody knows what's going on until you don't own that land anymore. You don't get any money. You don't get paid for it. So, you know, giving a little bit of credit where credit's due, at least the intention is to find who all might have a holding and pay them for it. But there is also the other side of that coin, whether he is aware of it or not. You know, sometimes people are guided in by their land development team that says, hey, you know, we can clear up all the access issues and so on and so forth. But taking Kuleana land has a lot of lot more than just a simple quiet title. Do you want to speak to that at all, or?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, I'm not clear about where Mr. Zuckerberg, you know, engaged with Uncle Carlos and started to have that discussion. And yet, you know, there are many people connected to the land that he's trying to quiet title. And, you know, he's going through a legal process, and the legal process is a process that's been used, like you said, since the Kuleana Act of 1850 to acquire. This is how people have acquired a lot of the land from Native Hawaiians over the years, or I should rephrase that, have taken the land from Native Hawaiian people.
Yes, without any compensation. Yes,
without any compensation, and you know, so I think that, you know, if his intention was truly to serve these landowners, or these people have some share in these Kuleana, then you know, I probably would have researched a little bit more about and understand not only the history behind the Kuleana Act has enabled, but also probably take an approach that would encourage seeking out those people connected to the land to have a face-to-face and a heart-to-heart discussion. And that's something that you don't see happen at all. So I can't speak for what his intentions are. You know, at this point, those lands are divided after generation after generation into hundreds of people. And so, I mean, gosh, this, you know, I mean, the reason why he's getting all this attention is because of his profile.
Right.
I mean, because truly he has, I mean, Mr. Zuckerberg has the opportunity to probably change everyone's life on this island if he wanted to. And so when we're looking at this particular process here, he could certainly, if he wanted to, engage these people and do a very good job of ensuring that if he does fed care for who these people are and their connection to the ancestral land, that they have a discussion. Some people would say, you know, kuka, get together and talk about it. At this point, what can happen? That's something that you wouldn't see. And boy, he would set a precedent for how we might be able to move forward with what I would call, you know, really good leadership. And I do think that, you know, people like him, they have a even bigger kuleana, because with power you got a bigger responsibility.
Yes, and it seems like there is an opportunity here when you know, somebody of extraordinary means, and if we take him at his word that he's here because he loves this place and he wants to do the right thing, okay, well, maybe, you know, there's been a little lid lifted off and here's a learning opportunity, and maybe there's a way to actually help to set a precedent and to do something very pono. I, without naming names right at the moment, I had about 3 hours worth of conversation today with several different kupuna and some very learned and capable people. And, you know, I, of course, try to get them to come in the station. It's sometimes a culture that's not that easy to drag in to be on the air. Hopefully that will happen coming up. But you know, some really powerful out-of-the-box ideas for bringing it together so that there is a righteous outcome for the Kanaka, the Hawaiian people. And it's not that the rest of us don't matter, but in this case of the Kuleana lands, this is really about, you know, people of Hawaiian ancestry. And so that is the bullseye of the target of making things right for. Mm-hmm. And I really invite the team. I'm not sure who his lawyer is. I saw some name in the paper, and I didn't know that person. Very often I see that, you know, I'm not slamming realtors and, you know, land lawyers, but, you know, sometimes there is a lot to be gained by not doing necessarily the righteous thing. And people maybe can get lured into doing things that isn't the right thing also, because it's basically standard operating procedure. And when the magnifying glass is on your name, I know for myself personally, I've been approached by a number of mainstream media to talk about this issue with Zuckerberg. And so, but I've just said, you know, they have to go on to the Kanaka people, because that is not my space to be talking about. It needs to be going to other people. But I have also been engaged in talking to different people. So hopefully we can have something that really good comes out of this.
Well, I hope so. And you know, it would be great to see that kind of initiative occur. And I think not only for Native Hawaiians in this case, I think that those who have lived here long enough not only have experienced and know exactly the feelings or the challenges that we're all experiencing when we talk about the housing issues, but the cost of living and just what it takes to live here. You know, it's I think everyone who lives understands some of what the plight of the Native Hawaiian people has been, and have experienced it to some degree, that understand the challenges that we face. So, you know, this could be a win-win for everyone. And again, like I said, setting a precedent that we might be able to come together. So if the intention is there, then I would welcome it and hope it does happen.
Yeah, well, that's you know, I try and look at every opportunity as a possibility to be moving in the right direction, because there certainly is enough stumbling blocks, but good things can come out of it. And when I look at Kilauea, we have, you know, more than 20 billionaires now living in our
our working class community of 2,000 people, you know, it's kind of a microcosm of what's happening to the nation in this economic stratification. And so it comes also back to housing and being priced off the land. I do need to say you're listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, the station that loves you. This is Mason Chott, council member from Kauai on the phone. How are you seeing the housing dynamics moving forward?
Well, you know, there's a lot of different changes that need to be entertained, looked at. Everything from zoning changes, you know, looking at how we might be able to transition to, you know, tiny homes as an option to solve some of the challenges. But even looking at how it is our current affordable housing ordinance can be revised so that we can enlist truly affordable housing. You know, these are issues that need to be addressed. And I think there's a strong interest, like you said, from this council. You will see an affordable housing amendment come forth soon. You know, the general plan, I think, is a good piece of what it is we're looking at, and we need to be clear about how and what we want to see in the future so that we can prepare the kind of legislation that's necessary for us to see in permitting everything from, you know, farm worker dwellings to how it is we can address those who just can't afford to even rent here on Kauai and are houseless.
So right.
We need to look at those opportunities, and, you know, I think the writing is on the wall for it, but we need to speed it up somehow.
Yeah, we have a pretty big challenge. I believe we have a caller who would like to ask you a question. Is that fine? Can I take a second caller and so you'll hear them?
Yes.
Okay, we'll take a quick call. Aloha, you're on the air.
Aloha, Felicia.
Hi.
Aloha, Mason. What a great guy he is. We're blessed on Kauai to have him, aren't we?
Yes.
Aloha. I wanted to make a comment about the Zuckerberg issue. You know, Zuckerberg, about 2 hours ago, the Honolulu Advertiser released a statement that he's reconsidering his actions. But I also feel that, you know, just a nice aloha marched from one end of the wall to the other, blow the conch horns, just not even wave any signs, but to do something like this, it really does open the opportunity to, you know, Zuckerberg was doing those town hall meetings. He went all over the world with town hall people. He talked about apps. He talked about vaccinations. He talked about renewable energy. We could make this opportunity, a little bit of pressure on Zuckerberg might get him to do a town hall meeting. And so he can listen to these people. He can hear, you know, like Auntie who was on earlier, and hear about how people are affected around this. I mean, that particular place, you know, depending on who you talk to, it's like, you know, Pilaha all the way down to Moloa Bay there. You know, it's a very sacred place. I think that it provides a good opportunity if we put some pressure on him to actually come, and if you want to be community, come have a town hall meeting, talk. Don't stay for 20 minutes. You know, come and talk for 3-4 hours. Like, listen to people's stories.
So,
and I think with a little bit of pressure, he could get that to happen.
Okay, thank you so much. And do you have a question for Mason or mainly that suggestion?
That was pretty much the suggestion that I wanted to
float out
to
there.
Say, as like any good politician, like they've done, would put some pressure on him. Now he's announced that, well, he's going to reconsider it. You know, if you have an aloha filled march from one wall to the other, and you call the world press, they're going to come, and he's going to quickly change. He's going to want to meet with people and actually discuss the issues.
Well, and, you know, hopefully that, you know, the community doesn't have to resort to extortion. It does happen that today CBS News was there, and so was a number of the people who are lineal descendants of the Kuleana land. So there was the press with people in front of the wall today. So thank you. And hopefully he will want to be a part of our community. He will want to be part of the leadership of bringing in his demographic to help Kauai bridge some of these challenges that we have. And I think a respectful ask is something that is always a first step. That's what we've been hearing. Like, if how he is offering an opportunity to be bought out is with a lawsuit, that's not a respectful ask. Maybe
no.
He was guided to do that. That's not a respectful act. So then you get a pretty strong pushback. And so, Marshall, do you have something to say?
Yeah, there was a statement from him today.
Okay, what does it say?
Through a communications firm, he said, based on feedback from the local community, we are reconsidering the quiet title process and discussing how to move forward. We want to make sure we are following a process that protects the interests of property owners, respects the traditions of Native Hawaiians, and preserves the environment. The decision follows criticism from many people, including Kauai residents, the Native Hawaiian Legal Corporation, and State Representative Kaniela Ng, over 8 lawsuits that he had filed.
Yes.
Yeah, that was the press release about a couple hours ago that was done, yeah.
So thank you so much for calling in, Joe, and I'm going to let Mason respond to this.
Thank you.
Okay, aloha.
Yeah, so I'm hoping, you know, his legal counsel is listening, because I think what we're talking about is, as you said, Felicia, you know, in the midst of struggle, there's opportunity that could also bring us together. And if he chooses to lead in this case, he could very well make a difference. I think if the interest is to honor the culture and honor the people and be a steward of the community, then let's not forgo the opportunity by stepping out. And I'm not saying he should do, you know, what he should do in his case here with the quiet title process. But certainly, I think that there's opportunity that we should continue to open the door and have a discussion with him if possible. You know, and, you know, I think the bigger picture for me is what we have lacked in doing in our government from the state level to the federal level on protecting some of these rights that Native Hawaiians have had, you know, since the Mahele, since the Kuleana Act, that we haven't been able to protect. And there have been measures. I know Representative Kaniela Ng is looking at trying to, you know, shore up a way and a process that can occur prior to it getting to this place of the quiet title adverse possession. You know, there was, I think in 2010, I think an act for, or maybe the Senate bill that, was to ask that the OHA become the trustees for all Kuleana lands, so that at the very least they would have the opportunity to research and find the Kuleana, land owners, the title holders. But I don't think it passed. So we should continue to seek out opportunities to really make things right, because, you know, oftentimes we don't. I mean, this has been happening for a long, long time, but it's not until you get something, you know, one high-profile person that it becomes really huge news. And so
they're looking at it around the world. So he's actually, in some ways, doing us a service by demanding. You know, it not only shames him, it shames our whole process of what happens. Eric has a question he would like to ask.
Aloha, Mason. Well, I really appreciate you calling in today and giving your time. Just to kind of go back to earlier parts about development, housing needs. So with housing, we all need to flush toilets and wash hands and there's been a lot of discussion in the later part of 2016, and I think in general in Hawaii, about water. What is your assessment, what is your feel about providing housing needs by, and also looking at our water needs? Are these two issues in alignment with each other? Do we have a problem with one and not the other? Is it an issue? Some people say it's not an issue, our water needs. Some people say that it is an issue. And it seems that it's very clear that at least with housing, everyone needs to have running water. So what's your Manal on that?
It's a huge topic, I think, Eric. But you know, it is an issue. And the issue is, and when it directly related to housing, is that we need to change our practices because we are, through the cesspools that we've created, and by the way, we don't know how many we have, truly, we can guesstimate that we're actually dumping our sewage into our streams, and so it will have an effect eventually. Does Kauai have a lot of water? Yeah, absolutely, but that doesn't mean we shouldn't be planning for tomorrow. I think the bigger issues that you might be sort of alluding to are issues of fairness and equality, and as you know, Hawaii is unique in that sense. Based on the public trust doctrine, to ensure that there is fairness in usage, and I don't know if it's I don't want to say it's people that are trying to take advantage of, but I think it's how we've done business in the last 100 years that has defined who has access to water and how they use it. So those are things that we really got to get a handle on,
mm-hmm.
and start to do a job on.
The Commission on Water Resource Management had a meeting last week, and there was some really powerful outcomes of their report. And I want to have Sherry Mann from the Division of Fish and Wildlife in here again, and with a couple people with stronger expertise than myself before I start to interpret that for people. I want to make sure I have an accurate message. But it sounds like there was a little bit of shift in policy in that determination. We have another caller holding that would like to ask you a question. Aloha, you're on the air.
Thanks so much, Felicia. This is Dee. I have such a passion for people like Mason and Felicia and everyone out there listening who really feel like we have power in changing this whole thing. And I really admire you, Mason, for kind of in a subtle way calling out what's been going on for the past 100 years or so. And I'm a Native American Seminole Indian, and same thing happened to us, So we've all been tricked. Now what do? We're addicted to Clorox, and all these things are, flowing down all the herbicides. I found out that there's so much stuff going in the taro fields. What a travesty. Of all the ortho products that I found out that are what's really behind the Hanalei River is the ortho products. What a bummer. And it's like we have all of these people who care about the Aina, and we're so smart here, and we're on the leading edge somehow on Kauai. We've always been, the people have always been on the leading edge with the electricity and the history, and we have the ability to get together and say, we don't need this insane usage of our lands, and we don't need, that's just destroying and polluting, and I'm sorry, but I'm going to call out the roundup on these golf courses is horrendous. Every Sunday we hear about it with the pets. Dr. Bosco is saying don't walk your pets on the golf course. That's because there's naked feet pets going around getting horrible diseases from these Roundup products. So that's one thing that I'd like to say, please, Mr. Chalk, look at this and call out the chem products. And there's other things out there. There's mitigations that we can do. We can start planting hemp and become an export, island. I mean, anything from Hawaii is sexier. Anything from Hawaii is tastier. It's better. We have the red dirt and the aloha here. Why are we letting these people step all over us and take over this place with their bad energy, I'll call it.
So do you want to let him respond?
Situation. The North Shore is overrun, and we need to get real here. we need to get real here. The middle class is like either 50-50. You're either homeless or you have someone to hang out on the couch for a couple of months while you find a place. So what I'm asking, number two, is for some sort of legislation to go through for normal people on the North Shore who have rentals. They have an extra room. They have a grandma suite in the back. And they're vacation rentaling it, and they're getting bed bugs. Hello?
So
that's
so,
a real problem.
So do you have a...
I yell bed bugs so freaking loud, because you know why?
Do you have a question?
Bed bugs are what's winning, and I'm losing as a mom. I'm losing a place to go, because people have to pay their taxes. They have to pay for their rent and their insane property situations. So what I'm saying is, let's give some sort of incentive to these normal people out there to rent to normal people who work on the North Shore and have this insatiable urge to freaking live here.
Okay, so let me stop you for a second.
In my throat, because I can't live anywhere else right now. It's my soul's, like, I have to live here. So I'm willing to live in a tent sometime to stay up here. And that's crazy. And I'm in love with the North Shore, and it's my destiny to be here right now and to affect change and to make calls like this to say, hey, I've been watching what this is happening for 7 years now. I've been here. And I've raised a little boy here, and I've seen how I get ostracized from having an apartment because they say, oh, you have a child. No. Or, oh, this. And so that's really important. And the third thing I want to say is that we're really a powerful place. And as soon as we realize that, we can do anything. And you have the people behind you, Mr. Chalk, and all of you people that we have hired to be in our voice box positions, because we're little people out there running around trying to make our rent, and it's your job to say what we can't say on a daily basis, and we can't make the Tuesday afternoon meetings or the weird times that they make these community hall meetings. I'm not going to be able to do that. So thank you so much for representing us, and thank you for having the Kuleana and in your heart, and just knowing that we're behind you. And when you start making that change and having the guts to stand out and not just be an apologist for that 1%, and I know the people are coming here, like Mark Zuckerberg, we're like this next frontier. You know, when they look around and say there's no more water in California and Arizona and Nevada, where do you think they're Googling? They're Googling the wettest spot on the freaking earth.
So caller. Thank you. And if I can frame a question in there for you, Mason, that I was hearing in that, when she's talking about the challenge of being a normal homeowner and renting to another person, something that I see that, like I went to the county to ask, you know, how that will impact my land taxes. And if you rent out a room to a friend or somebody who just needs a place, it brings up your land taxes like $2 per thousand. And, you know, that's a penalty. And I know, like, oh, you know, if you do it for a short period of time, well, then how are you ever going to get your homestead tax rate back? And so is there a way that you can see that would how can we not penalize people? How can we incentivize people to be opening their world to being a solution as opposed to doing Airbnb, where they can actually make some money and just risk it?
One of the challenges behind it, of course, is how high, because there's no inventory, you know, we're skyrocketing of what we can charge people for rentals. But I think what you're talking about is the fact that the commercialized home use tax category is now starting to catch some of these people who are renting out homes. And you can get an exemption from the tax office if you apply and if you document that you're renting it for so much. That will bring your tax, that will take you out of that category. A lot of people, I don't think, know it or use it. That's one aspect. But the challenge that we've been having, like I said, is that, the standard by which we judge that affordable rental is based on federal standards. And that's a issue.
Yeah.
We need to figure out how to how to really mitigate that for our local market, so that people can, so people will choose to actually put their home into a long-term rental for our residents. And we made a commitment last year that we would look at those things every year to determine what the market is like, and so we can make adjustments. And that's coming right up, so I think that you'll see that discussion coming up on the agenda.
Now, you're breaking up a little bit. I want to just make a comment, and then, you know, you can feedback on it, and then we should probably let you go because I know you have to be at a meeting. But when I heard the caller's heartfelt story, and I'm in the middle of these conversations so much, I know for people who maybe were born here, they have generations here, they'll feel like, I don't even feel sorry for you if you, in their minds, aren't from here. But we all are from this planet, and many people, like I used to lovingly refer to certain people as tumbleweeds, like fresh from baggage claim, and there are many people, and myself included, like we were poor, so I lived in 20 towns by the time I was 20 years old. So when people tell me, go home, well, I think, where is that? I can't think of a place that... If I said I'm from there, in fact, when people say, where are you from? I feel like I'm lying, no matter what answer I can give to somebody. And so when we talk about people from Hawaii, you know, really from here being displaced and they got into this dispersion, well, many of us who have sort of tumbled over here are part of an earlier dispersion. And so it's a displacement generation after generation after generation. And so... People don't necessarily have a place, you know, when the bar thing is, you don't have to go home, but you just can't stay here. Well, you know, where is it that people go to? So when I heard her emotion about this is where she feels she belongs, I take that seriously. That is where she feels she belongs, and it's where I feel I belong. I mean, I've lived here, you know, the majority of my life, and I try and contribute consistently. So that's the other side of the coin. We want to take care of the people who have a generational standing here, and on the other side of the coin, there's a little bit of pain there, too.
Yeah, I hear you. You know, the fact is, everyone has come from someplace else. Everyone that's here has come from someplace else. And... You know, the sooner we can start to recognize that, the sooner we can start looking for solutions. And, you know, when I hear you talking about that divide, you know, segregating people, you know, I know that people use it because of the differing ideals and perspectives, and it's easy for people to use it, but we've really got to get over that. And the truth is, I mean, it's not, when you look at the statistics, not the people coming from someplace else. It's us that's creating a population growth. It's an internal growth.
Yeah, yeah.
That's occurring.
Yeah.
So we need to take care of ourselves and stop worrying about, you know, what's happening outside. And if that's truly the issue, and people want change, then it's going to be a significant shift in our government system. I'm open to discussing. The fact is, even if you put caution tape around this island and close it up, we'd still be in the situation we are, with traffic, with housing, with our socioeconomic.
Yes. So thank you so much for calling in. I appreciate it. And I'm kind of starting to lose you on your phone quality, but we really appreciate your call, and have a good meeting with the Kekaha folks.
Mahalo, Mason.
Okay, Mahalo. Aloha.
Aloha. And he's, you know, making a good point there, and something I've always noticed with a big smile here is most of our social tension loses all of its conviction in the bedroom. Like, when you look at how people are married or who's with who, you know, it's...
We all like to make poi.
We all like to make poi, yeah. It's like it doesn't even seem to matter. You know, we have the majority of our marriages are... cross-cultural, cross-ethnicities, and I think in alignment with, like, the Women's March, it's really about unity and standing together and solving issues together.
So well said, Felicia.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, Marshall.
Hey, Noah, I'm looking at this article, the statement that Mark Zuckerberg made today, and I'm kind of excited. I think he could be an incredible asset to our community and a great addition. He says, "We love Kauai." He's talking about himself and his wife, Priscilla Chan. "We want to be good members of the community and preserve the land for generations to come."
Yeah. So let's hope for the best, and more than hope for the best, let's work for the best. Let's be involved. Jazz with John is coming up next. We're going to hear the county council report. I invite you to listen into that. John puts a lot of work into the county council report. And John, if you're listening, we love you so much. Last week, we really acknowledged how much you mean to us, and I'm glad to see you in here, happy and healthy and whole. And he does a lot for us. So showing up, I heard from the woman caller, not always can you show up, but many of us can. And wherever you can participate, that's what it takes, is to be utilizing your voice. And when I watch the council, you know, people who have a job that are paid to be there are going to be there, say if they work for a developer, not picking on the developers, but people, when there is a vested financial interest, those people show up. When it's just a citizen interest, it is time off work. And that's why the system seems like it always just keeps pushing towards the money interest, because the money interests are the ones who shows up. So it's a little bit of a rough call, but that's how it is, and it's not always that people are evil. It's that it's just how things work. So we have to work hard to be there. And I thank both of you gentlemen, and we're going to go on to the county council report.
Mahalo, Felicia.
Great. Felicia, thanks. And Eric, thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you. And don't forget, everyone, as Uncle P once said, aloha, everybody.
Yes. And we love John Gordon. Jazz with John, we love you, we love you, we
love you.
Love you,
John.
We love you.